conversation about legal issues that matter to you.
Understanding the culture tells you something about how the society develops its understanding of law.
It seems like they're protecting our right to privacy with cell phones.
This is Stanford Legal
with Pam Karlan and Joe Bankman.
Welcome to Stanford Legal, where we look at the cases, questions, conflicts, and legal stories that affect us all every day. I'm Joe Bankman with my co-host Richard Thompson Ford.
Hi, Joe. So today, we're going to talk about mental health issues and conservatorships, and that's something you teach some aspects of mental health law. But of course, in the news today, there's Britney Spears, who's been placed into a conservatorship, and everyone's wondering how this happened and why. Joe, what do you have any insights into this?
Well, you know, it's a sensational case, and the fact is, I did cover it with the class in mental health law I teach with our colleague Allison Morantz, but we quickly realized it's such an unusual case, we would need help to kind of decode it for ourselves and for others.
Well, luckily today, we have an expert who can help us do that. Michael Gilflix, who's a Stanford grad from 1973. He's the leading authority on elder law and questions of conservatorship. And he actually created the first legal aid program for elders in 1973. So I think he knows everything and more that we would need to know about this. And we're welcoming him today. Hi, Michael. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, greetings. It's a pleasure to be here. Great topic. Great topic.
It is. And so tell us, you know, most people, there's this Free Britney movement. And I have to say that the thought that someone would be in conservatorship so long, so seemingly functionally able in many ways as Britney Spears seems odd to us. Give us your take on it, Mike.
Well, you know, it is extraordinary. She is extraordinary. I don't know all the history, but I do know that there were at least a few episodes where something called a 5150, an extreme kind of conservatorship, was imposed on her. And the required finding there is that she was a danger to herself or others. It's pretty extreme. It usually comes up when somebody crashes and burns, they end up in the ER. And then the system kind of intervenes to be protective. So, you know, that's very important background here. And she's raking in mega millions. Looks like there were some inappropriate judgments made here and there. Looks like early on, at least, there was a reason to intervene protectively. But the real question is, how could it go on for so many years? You know, who were the players? What were the forces at work? And maybe the last introductory comment is that this type of conservatorship has a momentum of its own. They stay in place unless somebody actually petitions, actually takes some step to terminate. So they don't terminate on their own. And there's a built-in, you know, again, momentum is probably the best word, that there's a relatively high bar to stop them once they start. But again, Britney is unique. It's just not that many lessons, by the way. I don't know that we can draw that many lessons from her unique circumstances.
You know, just to pick up on one thing you said, Mike, the 5150 conservatorship, we're familiar with, those of us who do mental health, with someone who's acutely suicidal, for example, having an overdose, a danger of hurting someone else. Usually, no matter how suicidal they are, the truth is it's difficult to even find a bed for them for 3 days. So in general, we have people that might be picked up for 5150s 2 times a year, 6 times a year, 8 times a year. So the fact that someone has had a few 5150s, if you deal with people with mental problems, is almost no big deal. But Britney's been in there almost forever. So walk us through the process. How does someone like Britney get conserved?
So now we're talking about what would be called a probate concern. It's a gentler probate. It does not, for example, give authority to put her in a locked facility or to be forced to consume psychotropic drugs. But it does impose all kinds of restrictions and limitations. So somebody in her family, presumably, decided upon getting professional advice that she had to be protected, that she wasn't able to make appropriate financial or personal decisions. Now, this type of conservatorship, importantly, is actually of two types. There's a conservatorship of the person, which you can get, which can be petitioned for alone or in concert with the conservatorship of the estate. For the person, it has to do with, you have to show that a person's not able to make appropriate, objectively wise decisions about their health, their well-being, medical decisions, that kind of thing. Conservatorship of the estate, the showing in English is that you have to show that the person's just not capable of managing his or her money. And by the way, it is not a finding of incompetence. It is not. It's a functional assessment. Can they really manage their money, or can they really make appropriate decisions about where to live, getting appropriate health care? So the petition is filed. And once it's filed, it can be done on an emergency basis. And I think that's what happened here. Affidavits, sworn statements are submitted. And a judge sits there looking at all these statements about aberrant, dangerous behavior and has to make a decision about imposing an immediate, temporary conservatorship. And again, I think that's what happened here. And that happens, I don't want to say routinely, but you know, if you're a judge, you see these statements and you're feeling protective, you know, you opt for the conservative approach, which is to sign the petition. There will be a hearing within 30 days, usually a full hearing. And during that time, a court investigator, kind of the eyes and ears of the judge, a court investigator is to interview the proposed conservatee and other, the conservator, the petitioner, and other people involved, and present a report to the judge. Because, you know, the judge can't learn all of these things. So again, the court investigator is an incredibly powerful person. Then comes the hearing, then the decision is made. You know, are there grounds to establish either type of conservatorship or both? And by the way, court investigator will tell the proposed conservatee that she has the right to an attorney. And if she doesn't have one, one will be appointed. And that's what happened with Brittany.
What kind of judge hears this, Mike?
Well, they rotate. I mean, it's the probate court, so it will be a judge who is routinely listening to probate matters, conservatorship matters, you know, and they're human beings. They vary. You know, we see different predilections from different judges depending on their background and experience. And, you know, the attorneys who work in this field, you get to know the judges. You get to know what's going to work, what isn't going to work. I got to tell you, we are very slow to get conservatorships. As I say so often, for every 10 people who come to us saying they need to impose a conservatorship on mom or dad or on a child, if we end up going to court for one or two out of 10, I'd be surprised. There are much better alternatives.
This is Stanford Legal, and today we're talking with Mike Gilfix about conservatorships, and we're starting with the most famous conservatorship around these days, a conservatorship of Britney Spears. Mike, I want to pick up on something you just said, and this is getting a little bit to the Mike Gilfix part of this. So our listeners know a little bit about you. How many conservatorships do you think you've been involved with in advising clients or the like?
Gee, involved with and advising hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah.
How many have we actually taken to court to file a petition? Maybe scores. You know, again, I learned early on that the last place anybody should be is in court. I mean, I believe that very strongly. So we work really hard to keep people out of court. And there's so many tools and techniques that can be used. Again, not in extreme cases, but in the vast majority, you know, I think they're dramatically overused. So I'm not a fan of the process. You know, I think it can be used, should be used in rare cases when there's no alternative. So given the quantity of clients we have in our current office and the work that we do, we have a remarkably small number of conservatorships.
Well, one thing I'm curious about, and I know you said that Britney Spears isn't a representative case, but all of the people who are upset about Britney Spears' conservatorship, I think their common theme is that somebody's abusing the process, maybe for their own gain. Is that something that is common or a common concern with these conservatorships?
Yeah, I don't think it's common. I really don't. I mean, it rare is the circumstance where this much money is involved. And I saw that the fees that were apparently approved for the conservator were around $400,000 a year. you know, which is shocking at first glance. I mean, it really is. And, you know, I do think it's excessive objectively, but, you know, I can just see what the petition fees have to be approved. They come out of Brittany's estate. So there was a petition. The hours were listed or the responsibilities discharged. So a judge reviewed those fees and approved them. And they would have made the case that look at the complexity. Judge, look at the complexity. We're negotiating contracts. This is not normal. So again, there's nothing normal about it. In the normal circumstance, there isn't that much to do. It's making sure the investments are appropriate. You know, no crazy risks are taken. Bills are paid. And there will be accountings before either the attorney or the conservator is paid. So there is built-in oversight. So again, at a glance, the fees seem outrageous. You know, maybe not.
So how about the other thing you hear, which is related, and I don't even know if this is true. The fees go to the conservator. Is that the dad here, Mike?
Dad was a conservator. I think now he's conservator of the estate. Last thing I read. Conservator of the estate, not of the person. Somebody else is now conservator of the person.
But he would get his own fees as conservator of the estate.
Absolutely.
Do you have clients that are, is, I don't want to use the term able, but I'm thinking a lot of people I know in conservatorships, they might be very elderly, they might be having some dementia. Britney Spears seems quite able on some fashions. I mean, she can do an entire Vegas show, which is actually a mental feat as well as a feat of, you know, singing talent.
Yeah, you know, it certainly is. I mean, all I glean from everything that I have read, again, I'm on the outside looking in, is that there is such a pattern of, you know, apparent rationality and control and good judgment. And then it's shattered by something that she did that was out of the ordinary. So, you know, a current showing of competency and ability to manage complex things like a show. And I agree, that's incredibly complex. Yeah, you know, in the moment you look good. But again, all the history would be weighing on her. And again, you know, if you're a judge, you're conservative. You don't want to let somebody go do something that could end up being destructive. That's where you're going to get the biggest criticism, generally speaking. Now, in this case, you know, the world is coming down on the judges who have made these decisions. So they might regret some of the decisions that they made. But again, I think there's an inclination to go with a conservative course of action. And it doesn't look like she had the best legal advice. Some of the attorneys that she reached out to, you know, frankly, I checked out a couple of them. Objectively, not the most impressive folks, general statement. You know, I did think a little bit about how we might have handled it. And we've had, by the way, we were involved in one conservatorship, extremely sexy in a way. It involved a Nobel Prize winner, local individual, and he did indeed become enamored with a caregiver. He was indeed giving her a lot of money. And that became a potential. We were approached by the family to file a conservatorship. Long story short, we settled it. We came up with an alternative arrangement to protect her, to protect him and the family without going to court. I believe 9 out of 10 times that how it should be done, and it can be done.
Mike, I'm going to do a little reset here by telling our listeners and viewers that this is Stanford Legal. And today we're talking with you, Mike Gilfix, about conservatorships. And we've started with the Britney Spears conservatorships. And it seems as if there's a problem, it's almost kind of the perfect series of small storms or accidents. There's some original cause, there's some temptation to keep it going, both for the conservators who are getting a fair amount of money, although they might do a lot of work, and for the court, because these things have a kind of momentum of their own. And Brittany herself has not been her best advocate in the attorney she's hired.
That's right. And, you know, and there's also so much written again, you know, who knows for sure, but her situation with her kids, I mean, that would upset anybody. Mm-hmm. So you can see how that would lead to some, some emotional responses and not paying attention to money, because, you know, money becomes tertiary if you have issues seeing your kids, you know, so you can sympathize so easily. What I guess the main thing that troubles me about the whole case is The court investigator, there's supposed to be a report. After the first year, there's a report done, and then every 2 years. So the case is revisited. It doesn't sit dormant. I mean, the court investigator would be hearing from her, supposed to interview her, and there would have been court investigation reports filed with the judge. Some of these things just should have been addressed. But again, you know, this is hindsight. We're all so smart in hindsight. What did it look like at the time to the court investigator? Were there aberrant, you know, dangerous behaviors reported? She made all this money. She squandered this. You know, it's so easy to be a critic and want to free Britney. And I'm sympathetic, to say the least. But I've been around the block. You know, people do dangerous, crazy things. Sometimes we have to intervene protectively.
But it seems, and I think that we're all on the same page, it seems at some point, if you're in the prime of your life, you're allowed to do stupid things if you're Britney Spears with your money.
Yeah.
Well, you're not permanently conservatized. You're not a permanent conservatee. You're allowed to make the same stupid decisions as the rest of us.
And you know, one point I read that my wife also went to Stanford Law School, 1976 grad. You know, would it be the same if it was a man who made these errors in judgment? You know, I don't think it would. I think it would have been treated very differently. I don't think there would have been the imposing figure of daddy stepping up to take over and do things like this. So, you know, I do think that's an element in this case. You know, again, I think that's an objective comment. I really do.
Well, go ahead, Rich.
That raises, well, I mean, just the gender issue raises one of the complaints that people have made or that Britney Spears has made was that her reproductive rights and sexuality were rated in the conservatorship. And I wonder, is that, you know, remotely typical or is that very strange?
You broke up a little bit, but I think you're asking about any controls the conservator had over sexual relations.
Yes.
In a limited conservatorship, yeah. I mean, that is one of the powers that can be allowed to the conservator. It isn't common at all. You know, it's used when somebody is in real danger of some sort. So it does seem to me to be extreme and extraordinary. What I would have done as a judge had I seen it, as her attorney, you know, again, it's just really hard to, but it's rare. I mean, it's absolutely rare. Parents raise it when they have kids. Usually, you know, it's a kid with a severe type of special needs who could still be sexually active. I mean, that's when it comes up. Never have we seen it come up in a situation like this.
It must be very difficult situations. I can see there's so many complexities, and as you say, I wouldn't want to second guess the judges.
We'll be back with more from Mike Gilfix on Stanford Legal on Sirius Radio.
Answers for the legal questions you've been thinking about.
This is Stanford Legal.
Welcome back to Stanford Legal, where we look at the cases, questions, conflicts, and legal issues that affect us all every day. I'm Joe Bankman. Our guest today is Mike Gilfix, and along with Rich Ford, we're going to discuss conservatorships. And here, Mike, we thought we'd address the other side of conservatorship. It's not Britney Spears, but maybe it's my aging mother who's lucky enough to have a lot of money, but is come down with dementia. Or maybe it's a special needs child I have that has a severe learning disability.
So those are the typical situations where this issue comes up. But you know, I have to say that if people do reasonable planning, if you're an elder, you should have put in place your revocable trust, your durable power of attorney, your advanced healthcare directive. And those documents take care of 90%, 95% of the issues that would be addressed in a conservatorship. So a conservatorship reflects a failure to plan as well as some health issues that might have come up like dementia. On the special needs side, same point. That's when a conservatorship might be unavoidable. On the other hand, countless young people who are special needs have a sufficient level of capacity where they can sign their own power of attorney, where they can sign an advanced directive. With their income from Social Security or SSI, a government program, they can make a parent the representative payee and they take care of the money. So again, Still, there are alternatives. The conservatorship is those rare cases where there are no other alternatives available.
So you've told us two things. One is that we can do things to prevent this. And I want to pick up on that later on. Suppose we haven't done it. What do I do now? I mean, we talked about Britney Spears more or less from her perspective or the court's perspective, but now it's me with my aged mother. And we haven't gotten any of those documents, and she's kind of lost touch with reality. What do I do?
Sure. That's when you may have to go to court, because there's no way to get her compliance, no way to get your name on an account, no way to become her trustee. So you would have the option of filing a petition in court to be appointed her conservator. You would make the case that because of her dementia, if it's dementia, which you'd have to document, that she's not able to manage her finances, she lacks capacity to sign documents, and nobody can pay her bills. Judge, I need to be appointed so I can take care of her money. On the person side of things, the healthcare side of things, same thing. She lacks the ability to give or withhold informed consent. She can't consent to my getting access to confidential medical records. You know, HIPAA and other restrictions prohibit that. So I have to take care of mom. I have to be appointed and given these powers so that I can take care of her, since she can't take care of herself. And by the way, for the young person, it's the same thing. You know, my child is so extreme on the autism spectrum that he or she just can't make any decisions whatsoever. I need the authority to decide where she's going to live. I need to make medical care decisions. Same list of issues, obviously from a different perspective, though.
So you were saying this is obviously the not the most desirable choice. It would be better to have taken care of it in advance. If you haven't, how hard is it to get appointed as a conservator when you're in this tough situation?
Well, you know, if you're the person who is interested in stepping up, presumptively, you're going to be appointed the conservator. I mean, by statute, we do have priorities in California. Like a parent is the first priority. Family members, presumptively, by legislation in California, have priority. But on the other hand, one of the documents we have everybody sign is a nomination of conservator. It basically says, hey, if a conservatorship is ever needed, this is the person I want. It might be my best friend, my trusted friend, rather than my spouse. I've seen that many times, rather than my kids, or make sure this kid doesn't get anywhere near me. You know, the trusted kid is going to have the role. So, you know, again, preemptively, everything is about planning, right? And, you know, conservatorships are extreme. We try to avoid them. You know, they're a necessary part of the equation, and we do our best with them.
Mike, I'm going to again remind our listeners and viewers, this is Stanford Legal, and today we're talking with Mike Gilfex, and along with Rich Ford. We're talking about conservatorships. What should our listeners do if they want to prevent this? And like all of us, I guess, they're getting older. Who do they call? I mean, obviously, they'll know your name, but in general, what kind of lawyer do you call to get these advance directives?
Well, advance directives are pretty basic. I'm kind of a critic of the standard forms because mm-hmm. I don't think they delve into the yeah. issues that need to be. So, you know, it's an attorney who has experience. I think the most important element in choosing an attorney like this is it's somebody you can speak with, somebody you can communicate with. Lawyers do have a tendency to talk, not listen. That might be news to you guys, but yeah, it's true. So there's got to be a counseling side to an experienced attorney who doesn't say, here's a form to fill out, but really engages about healthcare decision-making. Is there a certain kind of music you want played in your room in the hospital if you can't communicate? That's a big item for a lot of people. What kind of burial do you want? Green burial? I mean, so there's a lot of issues there. So again, experience, the world of estate planning, elder law attorneys is a term you hear sometime.
So you've said many times that the conservatorship is the least desirable alternative. So the best alternative is to plan in advance. But do you have any thoughts about how we should reform the law around conservatorship that some people seem to think is not ideal?
Yeah, two things quickly. One is we do have in place in California something called Laura's Law, I believe it is. And there's law like that in about five or six states, very rare. And the idea there is if you're the parent and you have a child who's perhaps schizophrenic and you've seen them go off the deep end before. Normally with this 5150, the extreme, somebody has to crash and burn. It has to be an emergency before anything happens. Incredibly frustrating and painful for parents. They can see it coming with their kid. They know the behavior. They know it's about to happen, and they can't do anything. Laura's Law, very limited. It says in limited circumstances, if there's evidence, if you can see it coming and you can establish that, you can intervene before the crisis happens. So that is not adopted in every county in California. It should be in every state in the country so that interested, supportive people can intervene before there is a suicide attempt, for example. So that's one thing. And the second thing that I think is as important is when the conservatorship process commences, I strongly believe not just the right to an attorney, but that people should be advised about the alternatives so that before you finish the petition or maybe as it commences, they are educated about the alternatives. You know, countless folks with some stages of dementia, for example, still have enough capacity to say, look, I trust my daughter. I know who she is. Of course, I would sign a power of attorney to let her take care of things for me. They could simultaneously satisfy the standards for a conservatorship because they can't manage their money. So again, education and tools to let people learn about less intrusive, less expensive, more respectful alternatives to conservatorships.
Mike, I think that kind of takes us back a little bit where we started. And just to sum up, we've been talking with Mike Gilfix, one of the fathers, really, of elder law, one of the parents, I should say, of elder law, about conservatorship and, of course, of Britney Spears conservatorship. And your thought, though you were very tactful, Mike, about Britney Spears, is that it's hard to understand from what we know. It seems extreme. It seems like there were a lot of alternatives that would have respected the liberty interest of Ms. Spears. And what you're saying when we think of our loved ones and ourselves is think ahead, and there might be ways to settle things, to clarify things so that neither we nor our loved ones ever need to go to court.
Absolutely. Again, I deeply believe avoiding court is a value we should all pursue. And there are gentler, more supportive alternatives. And I'm sure, by the way, you know, Rich and Jeff, both of you have signed out your trust, your power of attorney, and your advance. I'm sure you've done your planning because you're educated about these things. Great.
Well, I think on that notice,
I may be calling you.
I think Rich and I have some homework to do, and I think the rest of our viewers do too. So, Mike, thank you so much, and we look forward to having you on Stanford Legal again. And we'll sign off for now.
This has been Stanford Legal on SiriusXM Business Radio.
If you missed any of it, listen on demand,
online, or with the SiriusXM app.